My voice memos, by the way, are entirely like episodes of our show and then 30-second clips of me recording my dog barking in his sleep. Hi, everybody, and welcome to Maintenance Phase, the podcast that's dealing with its white coat syndrome on its own schedule. Thanks.
Ooh, we're putting on our scrubs. We're listening to our stethoscopes. Yes. Let's extend the metaphor.
You are Michael Hobbs.
You are Aubrey Gordon.
This month, for our bonus episode, Michael, you had the idea of talking about healthcare and sort of our experiences with the healthcare system. I thought it was a great idea.
I had the idea of doing an episode that requires no research, where we can just hang out. This is a hangout episode. We were talking the other day about my move back to the United States. And as people may or may not know, I was living in Berlin for the last 18 months. And in September, I moved back to the US. And one of the joys of moving from one country to the other is you have to port over all of your like medical stuff. And you basically have to like start from scratch in the US healthcare system. So I have been in the process of doing that. And then there was like this weird interregnum period where like I couldn't get on Obamacare yet. So I was like going to like urgent care, physical therapy, and like I went to like an out-of-pocket random doctor. And so it's just like in the last 3 months, I have had probably like 10 or 15 doctor's appointments, which is like more doctor's appointments than I've had in like most of the rest of my life. And so I have thoughts about the medical system. And so we could just do an episode where we talk like in general about our experiences with doctors and US healthcare.
Yeah, let's do it, man.
And as a thin person, I know that I'm the most oppressed. So yeah, I want to bring absolutely. My oppression.
A thin white man?
A thin, you I know, me? A thin white guy. It's tough out here.
Who's got it worse? Nobody.
I should also mention that as part of my like many appointments, I also got Invisalign this week. So if my S's are like a little bit different than normal, or if I sound like I have a retainer in and like I'm an eighth grader, then that is why.
I don't think you sound different. Like at all. That
really?
I
think I sound so different and every single person is like, I don't notice a difference at all. And I'm like, how? All I can hear is my weird little S's.
I wonder if that's one of those things where it's like inside your head. So it's 100%. Magnifying it.
Yes. Like all of my other medical concerns, potentially.
Boy, oh we'll boy. See. Congratulations on your Invisalign.
Well, we'll see. I don't know. Dentistry is like a notoriously scammy field, and this might end up being an episode about how I got scammed into getting Invisalign. Unclear.
Wait, were you a braces baby? Did you have braces?
Dude, I'm still so fucking mad about this. I was supposed to get braces in seventh grade, which is like when people get braces, right? And then as a seventh grader, I was like, Mom and Dad, I don't want to get braces, because like I was self-conscious and I thought I would get made fun of. So my parents were like, we respect your wishes. And then I went back to the dentist when I was like 18 and they're like, holy shit, you need braces. And I had braces for all of college. Because my parents let me not get them. And I'm like, why didn't you just force me as a child to get fucking braces? So now, like, all of my, like, medical dental bullshit is caused by the fact that I didn't get braces when I was really young.
Boy, oh boy.
Parents are supposed to overrule their kids on this stuff. So I'm carrying around a lot of resentment about this.
I was a braces kid and a headgear kid.
You had headgear?
Fully had headgear.
For how long?
Couple of years.
Wow.
I puff painted the strap that goes around the I like put my name on it and like sparkly. I was like, this is, I'm gonna make this cool. I did not. Reader, I did not make it cool.
Did you get bullied and stuff?
I think this was a place where like I just wasn't picking up that this was like not a cool thing for kids. I was in grade school. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, that's the time to do this stuff. Totally. Because kids aren't really like, there aren't really like status hierarchies in the same way before puberty.
And then later I got to be mortified that I wasn't mortified at the time.
Yeah.
I got to be dismayed with myself on a couple of levels.
I was happy with my physical appearance. What an odd thing for a child.
What a weird malfunctioning child.
I was fine about my differences. I mean, one thing it did sort of work out for me, because I now have an excuse for not getting laid in college. I'm like, no. It was the braces.
There were reasons. Don't worry.
It was
about
not
it.
The braces. But in my head, I'd be like, oh, yeah, it was totally the braces.
You just kept debunking things on dates, and they were like,
yeah. So we, in this episode, are just going to kind of walk through like the experience of dealing with U.S. healthcare and tell our own stories. Most of mine are funny, honestly, but I feel like most of yours are going to be really bleak.
Yeah,
so I think we have like
true.
A yin and yang situation going on with these.
Yeah.
So you said when we talked about this episode originally, you said that one of the main things you wanted to talk about was like the experience of finding a doctor for fat people.
Yeah, totally. I mean, I think, you know, finding a doctor for anybody is rough. It's like finding a therapist. It's like finding, you know, like anyone to whom you are going to entrust any part of your health or experience.
Yeah.
And I think for fat people, it is like a total minefield of a different order than if you are not a fat person, in part because a plurality of healthcare providers in the US are like profoundly biased against fat people and don't really think it's a problem.
Yeah.
Right.
And in a way that is like so hard to tell from the outside. Right. You can't like go on their website and be like, oh, like on the scale of hating fat people to not hating fat people, I'm like a 4. Like there's no way to determine it other than going there and having like a super shitty experience.
For a bit there, the only system that we really had, sort of formalized system in the US for finding doctors if you were fat, was to go onto the Health at Every Size registry.
Right.
But the Health at Every Size registry was basically just people filling out a pledge and saying, this is important to me.
Oh,
right.
Okay.
It was all self-attestation. And the people who are worst at this don't think they are biased.
Yeah.
The people who are worst at this think they are helping by being the worst at this.
Yeah.
So it's like actively unreliable information. Mm-hmm. We get this question from healthcare providers to the show as well, where they're like, how do I signal that I'm like a fat friendly place?
Yeah.
And I'm like, there are some sort of surface things that you could do. But the main way that I find healthcare providers, the main way that most of the fat people I know find healthcare providers, is by asking other fat people about their experiences.
Yeah.
Because that self-attestation stuff is so unreliable.
Right.
Because nobody's volunteering their own biases, because most of us aren't even that aware of them, frankly.
Right.
It just becomes a really, really sticky situation. So instead, we end up with sort of spectacularly disorganized efforts to sort of centralize lists of doctors and all that kind of stuff. I will say there's one quite good resource now, which is Mary Lambert has pulled together a spreadsheet of healthcare providers that fat folks have had good experiences with. Mm. And the only threshold is you had a good experience with this person.
Yeah.
We're not making any other claims than one fat person had one good experience here.
Right.
And honestly, that's like head and shoulders above most healthcare providers, right?
How did you find yours? Because you wrote in your last book about how like you actually have kind of an okay doctor now.
I found my healthcare provider on an Instagram post that I made asking fat people for their recommendations for healthcare providers, positive experiences. And that thing ended up with like thousands and thousands of comments. It's sort of, it's a couple years old now, but people still will comment on it every, you know, week or so and be like, I'm looking for a doctor in Dallas. Who can help?
People are so desperate for information on this.
It's so rough out there. And like you say, there's like not really any way to know. You can't like, again, go onto their website. You can't, there's no like rate my professor of like doctors on fat stuff, right? So you really are just hoping that it's not gonna be like absolutely every other time you've been to the doctor, right?
I did actually do a little bit of reading on this, and it appears from like, there's of course not that many studies done and they're all very small and qualitative and stuff, but it does appear that fat people are more likely to like doctor shop, kind of bounce from doctor to doctor than non-fat people. And I do feel like that has to be related to the bad quality of care that they get. And like, yeah, you would think that like on a structural level, a group that just has to choose a new doctor every time they go to the doctor would also just kind of overall receive less care.
Yeah, totally. I mean, listen, the thing that sent me over the edge and made me just stop seeking healthcare for some years was that I went in for an ear infection and I asked about aftercare and the doctor was like, well, you need to lose weight.
Right.
And I was like, oh, cool. There's nothing I can seek healthcare for or this won't come up.
Right. Did you say anything in the moment or were you just like, thanks, bye?
No, I was 27 maybe. Mm-hmm. And I felt really young and inexperienced in advocating for myself in healthcare. And every healthcare setting that I had been in presumed that I was wrong already.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
By walking in with the body that I had, it presumed that I didn't know what I was doing, that I didn't know what my needs were, and that I had nothing of meaning to contribute to this conversation.
Right.
So you just get sort of cowed by that. It still comes up for me, right?
Yeah.
But like, on our little list of like topics to cover, you were like, oh, we should talk about seeing a specialist. And I'm like, I've literally never been referred to a specialist.
Wait, really?
That's never happened to me in my adult life.
Holy shit.
Yeah. And I think part of that is that there is that sort of like brick wall that comes up right around fat people, which is just like, I'm less likely to talk about my symptoms because why would you want to share something vulnerable with someone who feels like they're just going to be a jerk to you, right? Like, I would think about, like, if your doctor was one of the mean girls from your high school.
is
kind of the experience that I feel like I was socialized to have with doctors. There have been, like, multiple issues that later on from better doctors and more attentive doctors, I have found out went undiagnosed for years and needed treatment for years, right? So there's just this presumption that you don't know shit about your own body. So why would you advocate for yourself when clearly the doctor knows better and you can't even take care of yourself, right?
And, like, things we've both been reading for years about this issue, it seems like if you push back on your doctor, you then get this like fragility response, right? Like, are you calling me biased?
Yes, absolutely.
There's this weird like coddling that has to go on where like even when you're being treated like shit, you can't be like, hey, fuck you. Give me some actually decent advice here. Like, write this on my chart, please. Because then what you've basically done is you've escalated the interaction into like a conflict. And then once you're in a conflict, then it's like, oh, we have a difficult patient on our hands. And it's like a whole fucking thing.
And what we already know from research into anti-fat bias with healthcare providers is that most MDs in the US already think fat people are going to be non-compliant.
Yeah.
Right? Like, already are predisposed to believe that a fat person is going to defy their recommendations, isn't going to do what they suggest, isn't going to follow their plan, in part because of a biased belief that if fat people followed their plans, they wouldn't be fat anymore.
And then
they would be trustworthy. They would be a trustworthy thin person, right? Mm-hmm. Those kinds of conversations with your doctor are like not dissimilar from the kinds of conversations you'd have with like your mom or your friend or whatever, right? It's the same kind of defensiveness, and that kind of defensiveness is like a brick wall.
I read a good meta-analysis of this about like avoidance of care among fat people, and it says the following 10 themes were identified. These are mostly like focus groups and like kind of qualitative interviews with fat people. It says, contemptuous, patronizing, and disrespectful treatment, lack of training, ambivalence, attribution of all health issues to excess weight, assumptions about weight gain, barriers to healthcare utilization, expectation of differential healthcare treatment, low trust, poor communication, avoidance or delay of health services, and doctor shopping. So these are all the sort of sub-issues that seem to come up when fat people are avoiding care. And as you said, there's like a bunch of different like places where this can show up, right? This can be like avoiding an appointment with a primary care provider, but this can also be like you don't get a referral to a specialist, or like you don't get a scan that you need, or like even if they do send you a referral, you're like, oh, I don't want to deal with like the fucking radiation tech.
Yeah.
Like they're probably, you know, there's like a 50-50 chance they're going to be a fucking asshole. So like, I'm just going to put it off and then like, oh, maybe I just won't get it. Like, I think there's a lot of sort of difficult to measure kinds of little delays that get thrown in for fat people.
Well, and the fatter you are, the more sort of those delays are compounded, right?
Yeah.
So like, for example, if someone orders an MRI for a fat person, but the closest MRI that will fit that fat person is two states away.
Right.
What are you going to do? Right. Like, there's like all of this stuff that incurs other costs. It makes everything more complicated.
Yeah.
It's a real challenging layered situation. I mean, you and I have talked about this, the number of stories of people, fat people who had like tumors, but were being told to just lose weight, right? Yeah. The number of fat people who missed cancer diagnoses because they were told to just lose weight is through the roof, but also it shows up in smaller ways. For example, an office visit for a thin person is about 30 minutes. An office visit for a fat person is about 20 minutes.
Yeah.
Right. Like we're just like straight up getting less time.
Yeah.
Healthcare providers build less rapport and therefore less trust with their fat patients. Right. Like the relationship is fractured in a million different ways.
Yeah.
You're in an impossible position.
But then, okay. So in the next like stage of medical care, there's finding a doctor, and then there's, once you get to the doctor's office for your appointment, there's the very fraught thing of getting weighed before you get any kind of care. So this is the thing that made me want to do this episode, is because first of all, you know, I've been having these like various different appointments, and like I have gotten weighed at fucking almost all of them. Mm. Like sometimes I'll have like an appointment with a doctor, and then like a week later I'll have an appointment about something else, right? Because it's all kind of fractured into these different things. And they'll try to fucking weigh me at both times. And it's like, you just weighed me 3 days ago. You don't need to fucking weigh me again. So for years now, I have been like, partly as an experiment, but also partly because I don't actually want to know. I tell them like, I would not like to be weighed.
Yeah.
I'm kind of testing, like, you know, what is it like to do this? Although, of course, a thin person saying this is very different than a fat person saying this. But in my experience, I have mostly had good experiences with this.
Yeah.
So in, I think, October, when I had my first appointment with, like, my new health insurance company, I just, like, said, oh, I'd like not to be weighed. And they're like, okay. And we just moved on to the blood pressure thing. And it was, like, super chill. But then, like, a week later, I went for a fucking ear appointment. And they wanted to weigh me, which makes no sense, but whatever. And it was like this dude who looked like maybe 21 or something, like a younger dude. Maybe he was new in the job. I don't know. Mm. And he was like, oh, let's take you over here and weigh you. And I was like, oh, I'd prefer not to be weighed. And he's like, why? I was like, I just don't really want to know. You could tell he like needed to write something in the chart, or like he thought he needed to write something in the chart. Uh-huh. And so then there's this like long pause that's like clearly like awkward for him, because like it doesn't seem like he'd ever like dealt with this before. And then he's like, well, what do you think your weight is? And I was like, I'm not just going to fucking estimate. Like I have not weighed myself in like 10 years. I literally do not know. I couldn't even like ballpark my weight at this point. And like whatever he writes down is then going to become canonically my fucking weight in my medical record. So I'm not just going to finger in the wind my fucking weight. The whole interaction was so fascinating to me, because it's like, you know, we're told over and over again that like weight is like the key to your health. And like, you know, without knowing somebody's weight, we couldn't possibly know anything about their longevity or anything else. But then it's like you get to the clinics and they're like, can you just eyeball it? What do you think your weight is?
Yeah.
It's like, well, is this a real fucking measure or not?
Yeah, it's so tricky. The getting weighed one is a tricky one for me because of what you just mentioned, which is like, as a fat person, it's a really different experience.
Totally.
I'm so happy for the many straight size people and smaller fat people I know who feel liberated of that expectation, right? And feel like they can just say, I don't actually want to be weighed, or I'm going to step on the scale backwards and I want you not to tell me the number, or whatever the thing is, right? However they want to go about that. And I will say, as a fat person, a couple of things. One, every moment of every doctor's appointment, I am prepared for a fight.
Yeah.
Because any moment of that appointment could be a fight, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And because weighing is one of the first things that happens when you walk in the door, I'm like, I'm not going to waste my fight on this thing. And also because the couple of times that I have requested not to be weighed, at one point I got like a discussion.
Oh, really?
Yeah, totally. Being like, I just don't want you running from the truth.
Oh, my fucking God. Seriously?
Yeah, for sure.
Oh.
And the other time I got like an, okay. You know what I mean? Like, and I was just like, I don't need this shit.
Yeah, it's like, oh, it's going to be one of those patients. Like, yeah, fuck off.
I know that I'm like somewhere between 330 and 350 pounds at any given point in my life, right? And I'm like, it doesn't, I don't feel a deep, deep, deep conflicted relationship to that number. Mm. So I'm just like, I'm not wasting my fight on this. I'm going to waste my fight on, actually, I have these symptoms and I need you to treat these symptoms. Or like, actually, if you're going to prescribe weight loss to me, I need you to know that you're sending me off to do an impossible thing. So can we fast forward through the part where you tell me to like fly to the moon by myself? Right. And get to the part where you like give me 10 days of amoxicillin or whatever. Can we just fast forward where you actually just give me antibiotics and we skip past this whole part? Again, like I feel so happy for folks that they are pushing back on this front. And it does feel like one where like really and truly, like the fatter you are, the less likely that request could be to be taken seriously. Right.
I do think that it is very weird, though, that like people seem to think that this is like some intrinsic component of the healthcare interaction. When like my understanding is that America is one of the only countries that does this. I have never been weighed in Germany or Denmark or the UK when I've gone in for routine care.
Yeah, we've heard this from many listeners in many other countries where they're like, what the fuck are you guys doing every time?
This is clearly something that has like been constructed and is like something that has been told to medical providers to do. But without, it's not clear to me that there's any real evidence that this does anything either. It's like, I made the mistake of posting about this on Twitter afterwards. Oh, I was like, yeah, I went to the doctor, asked not to be weighed. And like, it's probably mostly because I'm thin, but honestly, I was like fairly impressed with like, I had this positive interaction. This is after the first nurse, not the second one. And the amount of like weird scolding that I got from people where it's like, actually, a weight fluctuation might be a sign of like something really serious.
What?
Do you think I don't look at myself when I get out of the shower? Do you think I wouldn't notice like a serious fluctuation in my own weight? Of course I notice what's going on with my body. I don't need a number for that. And like most people don't go to the doctor often enough that they would notice those kind of weight fluctuations anyway. It's like people resort to like the weirdest shit to defend this practice.
It's so bizarre. It's so entrenched. And again, I think it does come back to that kind of rhetoric of like, I don't want you hiding from the truth, right?
Yeah, it's sort
of like this, like facts don't care about your feelings kind of like outlook on the world, right? There's a handful of things. And when those things kick in, the weight gain is usually so dramatic and so sort of abrupt that you really do notice your own body changing pretty rapidly, right? Like it feels like a real solution in search of a problem.
Oh, totally. There were a lot of people who were like, what if you need to go in for major surgery and they have to weigh you? It's like, well, then fucking weigh me. Yeah. Like I don't, there's like this weird thing where you're like, if it's not medically necessary, you don't need to weigh me. And then people are like, what if it is medically necessary?
Then do it. I don't know.
I'm not against people being weighed as a principle. It's like, if you need to do it, if I'm getting my fucking appendix out and for the dosage of the anesthesia, you need to know how much I weigh, then fucking weigh me. But like, that's not most visits to the doctor.
Yeah, I will say this. I've had one experience with general anesthesia and it was just to have my wisdom teeth out. Happened, I don't know, 5 years ago. Great.
Really? You got your wisdom teeth out that recently?
Very late.
Wow. Yeah. Were you tripping balls? Did somebody have to pick you up from the hospital?
No, here's what the fuck happened, Mike. They didn't weigh me. They didn't weigh me at the dentist's office. They're not doing that. They were just like, how much do you weigh? And I was like, I don't totally know. At the time, I was like, I think I'm around 400 pounds. The dentist absolutely made a little face. He was like, ooh. Oh. I was like, hey, chill
don't
out.
Do that.
Don't do that. Oh. And then he was like, okay, we'll figure it out. Like, he seemed sort of perplexed by like how to deal with a fat person needing anesthesia. And what ended up happening was that they gave me anesthesia. I went in to have my wisdom teeth out at 8 a.m. and I was not able to be woken up to get out of the chair until 2 p.m.
No way. So they like really put you under.
My very sweet dad was waiting to take me home and they were like, she's not conscious. We can't do this.
He went and saw Avatar 2 and came back.
Just hung out in the Janssen Beach strip mall parking lot while I was at Janssen Beach Modern Dentistry. It's gone now. I feel fine about saying that.
You're doxing your dentist.
So like people love the anesthesia shit, but I'm like, also, you should talk to a fat person because they very often fuck up the anesthesia too.
Yeah.
Like, it's not like they're doing a bang up job when they do need it necessarily.
Dude, okay, on the doctors making faces thing. I once, when I was living in Denmark, I was shaving my tits and I cut myself like near my nipple. And then eventually it got like infected.
Oh no.
And it became like more and more like super duper infected. And it was just like really gross. And so I went into the doctor and I was like, I have this like weird infection, like kind of on slash near my nipple. And he goes, okay, let's see it. And I took my shirt off and he looks at it and he goes, ugh. I was like, wait. I was like, that's not the sound I want to hear from a fucking medical professional. I was like, that's what my friends say.
Like, that sucks.
That was the sound that he made, basically.
Ugh. I will say, a good friend of mine who is of Korean descent for quite some time was like in and out of the hospital dealing with a really complex healthcare thing, mm-hmm. and had the experience of like one of her symptoms at one point was having jaundice, mm-hmm. and boy oh boy, the famous symptom of jaundice is that your skin gets like a yellow tint.
Jesus Christ
Fill in the blank, everybody. How many racist jokes can doctors make? So many.
Maybe don't make racist jokes to your patients. That seems like a fairly easy one. Dude, I once got a thing too. Because I've been jogging for years, and like you only really rent your ability to jog because you're just constantly getting an injury. Like every year it's like a hip thing or a knee thing or an ankle thing, whatever. And so I went in at one point with like a metatarsal sprain. And I was like, I have this weird thing in my foot where I can run. Like I can go jogging like 10K and it's fine. But if I walk, I'm in like incredible pain. Like I can't walk to like the milk section of the grocery store and back without being like in intense pain. Mm. I was explaining it to my doctor and he's like, there's this long pause and he's like, are you sure? I'm like, yes.
You sure you're not lying to me?
I'm like, yes, of course. He's like, well, that doesn't make sense. I'm like, hence me being here. That's why totally. I'm fucking here. I have this weird thing.
That's why I dragged my whack skeleton here.
Yeah, Jesus Christ.
Come on.
You keep doing that. That's like an inside joke about my whack skeleton.
Sorry.
And I had to delete it from the last episode. So it's like, nobody's going to get this.
Well, it's also like it's a tweet that I responded to one of your tweets with.
Yeah.
And I think both of us have deleted our tweets since then.
Yeah.
So like, there's no way for people to find out what the fuck I'm talking about, but I'm so delighted by it. I'm so sorry. I keep doing it.
This is my physical therapist, my urgent care physical therapist, who I went in and he's like, stand up and, you know, let your arms dangle to your sides. And then like one of my arms was like 4 inches below the other one. Cause I guess I'm just like wildly asymmetrical. And he's like, so your entire skeleton is whack. That is accurate. So now I think about myself and my whack skeleton.
I really love the idea of like diagnosis whack. Like a healthcare provider.
The funny thing is I have seen like 3 more doctors for this issue since that one guy, and it has not gotten any more specific or helpful than whack skeleton. Like no one has been able to tell me fucking anything about my shoulder other than, oh yeah, his skeleton is whack. Like, all right, well, turns out he was correct on the first one.
It's also wild, like you and I have since making this show have both now been in this position of trying to get a medical mystery solved, trying to get more information about our bodies, and hitting that kind of brick wall that we talk about fairly often on the show for people who have symptoms that they're trying to get to the bottom of, or folks who have chronic illnesses, or folks who have disabilities, or what have you, that it is just like the lack of curiosity, the lack of interest in like getting something figured out,
the lack of
systemic ability to do that thing, right? Like the number of conversations that you will have with doctors being like, look, it's pretty clear that this is what you need, but your insurance doesn't cover it.
Or
we have to go through all these weird, very silly steps to get you a referral, or whatever the things are, right? I feel like I'm in a constant state of like having the sort of like raison d'etre for the show being reinforced for me, where I'm we're both in it all the time.
And also how much this fucking bedside manner stuff, like I think it really matters. Like the sort of the attitude that you get from your doctor and like the general tone. Like I've definitely gotten doctors that have sort of like scolded me for going to the doctor.
Yeah.
The maddest I've ever been at a doctor was when I had this metatarsal thing.
Mm.
It's really debilitating to not be able to walk, right? I could walk for something like 5 minutes before I was in like excruciating pain. Mm. And so I went into the doctor and I was like, I have this thing. I cannot walk. It's really affecting my life. I've been Googling around. I'm pretty sure it's a metatarsal sprain. So I need like a referral to a foot specialist or like to get these like kind of foot inserts that can like alleviate this. And my doctor goes, what's your doctor's name? And I was like, what? And he's like, what's your doctor's name? And I was like, it's you. And I said like, Dr. Jones or whatever. I was like, Dr. Jones. And he's like, oh, so your doctor isn't Dr. Google?
Oh,
it's actually Dr. Jones.
Okay.
I was like, fuck off. Like, yeah. I'm in pain.
Yeah.
I cannot walk. You think I'm not going to fucking go on the internet? Like the little machine that I have in my hand that has all of the fucking world's information on it. You think I'm not going to fucking look up the thing that is like causing me massive like problems in my life?
Yeah.
Like, what the fuck is this? And then he gave me this whole fucking lecture about like, oh, the medical profession and like, we can't be usurped by our patients looking up information. And again, I couldn't push back because I don't want to be like a difficult patient. So I was like, wow, good point. Wow. Thanks so much.
Yeah.
And then eventually he's like, okay, I'm going to give you a referral to a podiatrist. Go to the podiatrist. They're like, yeah, we think it's a metatarsal sprain. Great. Thank you. Wow. Hugh, breaking news.
That doctor's name who shared that information with you was ironically named Dr. Bing.
It was actually Dr. Duck Duck Go. It's a very odd last name.
I could do this all day. We go Dr. Alta Vista.
We're running out of them. Dr. Lexus Nexus.
Dr. Dogpile.
Okay, so the next stage of the U.S. healthcare system, and this is like the one where I have the most stories, is just like the primary care appointment. Like, what is it like to go in and like talk to a doctor about like whatever concern that you have? And something that has like super fucking radicalized me really since coming back to the U.S. This never happened to me in the other countries that I've lived in, but in probably 50% of the doctor's appointments that I have had since moving back to the U.S. in September, I have been congratulated on my thinness.
Good.
And very like openly. So the first appointment I had, I have this lingering shoulder thing that whenever I go for a bike ride and I wear my backpack, my shoulder starts to hurt and then it just gets like worse and worse and worse. So I went into the primary care physician, just like I knew that I needed a referral. It's just like, look, I'm just doing this for like paperwork reasons. We both know I need a referral to a PT. I went in and she like looked at me and stethoscope and sort of poked at my shoulder and whatever. And she's like, you need a referral to a PT. I was like, great. And then we're kind of, I don't know if this was like part of the appointment or if it's like small talk, but she's like, oh yeah, you know, I guess you got this from biking. I was like, yeah, I do a lot of bike riding around here. And she's like, yeah, you know, I bike around too, but it gets so sad when you get into like the neighborhoods in South Seattle. You just see the obesity everywhere.
Oh, God.
I'm like, really? You're just going to fucking say it to me? I'm like, yeah, we have all kinds of people who live in Seattle. And then she's like, well, you know, I guess that's not your problem, though. You look so fit or whatever.
God, this feels like when I would knock doors on any like LGBT issue, there was always like a subset of people who read me as a straight person and then would just like open up about their feelings about the gays. And I feel like that's what you're having here, where they're like, you're part of the brotherhood. You would understand this.
Totally.
And you're like, don't. Ew. What?
It's like they think I'm fucking safe to talk about this shit with, but it's like, you don't know me. Like, you don't know what my parents' weight status is. You don't know my partner's weight status is. You don't know my friends and my family.
Yeah.
And then this has happened, like, fucking, I went to the fucking ear guy. And I, like, sat down to get my little fucking earwax thing, whatever, checked. And the guy again was like, man, you look so fit. We don't get that many people like you in here.
Ugh.
I'm like, what the fuck is this? How are you treating other fucking people? Like, all that does is teach me that like you're gonna talk shit about me to your other patients. You're gonna give worse fucking care to your fat patients. Like, don't build rapport with me by like shitting on other groups.
This is part of a larger sticky dynamic that is often sort of a bitter pill for folks who are not fat to swallow, right?
Mm-hmm.
complimenting someone for being thin presumes that they wanted it. It presumes that they worked for it. It presumes that people who don't look like them didn't work for it and are in sort of dereliction of duty. There's like all of this baggage wrapped up in it. So like folks want to hang on to something that they think of as like the nice thing.
Yeah.
And like, however we feel about it and however you decide to navigate your social moments is like up to you. But there's no question that that's a practice that is rooted in bias against fat people.
100%.
Right? Like that's like not actually defensible on any level as anything else.
Not that there's any excuse to do this under any circumstance, but it's like the ear stuff. It's like really doesn't fucking matter my physical fitness if I'm in there for fucking impacted earwax.
I really appreciate that this episode is turning into like ENTs, you're on notice.
I know.
We got big beef with big ear.
This was actually like this ear doctor was one of the most obnoxious doctors I've ever seen because he seemed really to want to like build rapport with me. So he was like asking me about like, you know, previous interactions with the medical system and like family history of stuff. And then he had like little quips for everything. He's like, oh, do you have any family history of stuff? And I was like, oh yeah, we have some heart disease in my family. And he's like, families are hard. and then he was like, do you have any, like, are you taking any other medications? And I was like, oh, for some period I was taking some antidepressants. And he's like, welcome to life. I don't need you to like comment with like, it's not improv. I don't need you to do this for every little piece of information that I tell you.
This is like the segue banter between local newscasters when they're getting ready to throw to commercial.
Yes.
Wow. Tough stuff. Well, tomorrow's St. Patrick's Day and top of the morning. Like, no.
It was the weirdest. I'm like, I don't need this level of banter from my like healthcare provider. And then, I think he was like trying to do like bedside manner shit with this like you look fit stuff. But like, it's also worth noting that like I'm not that fucking fit, right? I'm just like a normal looking thin person. So I'm wondering like how many people are they giving this little fucking speech to? Like how often are they congratulating just like non-fat people for their non-fatness?
Right. And if I went into that ENT, what's my experience?
Exactly. I mean, it's also very notable that like I have not seen a non-thin doctor. I mean, I know fat doctors exist, but like in my experience, all the doctors I've seen, like one of the, my PT guy is an ultra marathoner. He's like training for some like 100-mile race. Very nice guy, but like also extremely thin. And my previous doctor that I had in the US was like, I used to see, because the hospital's near my house, and I would see him jogging through my neighborhood with his shirt off because it's like hot out. And he looks like a fucking underwear model. He's like six pack, 2% body fat, the whole thing. I think he also runs marathons. He went to Yale. There's nothing wrong with people who do this shit, obviously.
Yeah.
But it's just like at a systemic level, if like everyone who is like frontline medical personnel has like the same kind of traits, that does in fact represent kind of a problem. Like we should have a much more representative population of people getting into the medical field. And it's like kind of a problem that it selects for like a certain kind of person and someone who has a lot of privilege that appears to be quite invisible to them on a lot of levels.
Well, and we hear all the time from fat medical students, from fat folks in like PA training programs or nursing school or whatever, who will write to us in like abject distress about the amount of anti-fatness and how when they try to speak up about it, their professors and other classmates turn it back to them as like justification for being fat, that it's just like self-serving logic to not want to talk about this stuff as much. It really does feel like an incredible feat for a fat person to make it through a training program and then to exist in a workplace that is so dominated by this sort of like line of thought. Like, it really seems like no wonder to me that there are so many fewer sort of like doctors doing this work who are fat people, right?
Totally.
I also think about that fucking contestant on The Biggest Loser who was a nurse who was like, I have to lose weight because my patients don't trust me.
Yeah, there's also the aspect of like discrimination from patients, which is also really interesting.
It's just layered in 1 million directions, right?
Yeah.
I'll tell you this on your banter thing. At one point I had a root canal. I was in like middle school and I was so nervous about this root canal and had actually asked for nitrous oxide because I was like, I don't want to know what's happening here. I'm so amped up. I'm such an anxious baby.
Yeah.
So we're like ramping up for this root canal to start. And I'm just like totally panicked. And this doctor keeps telling the most ridiculous, corny jokes I have ever heard.
Did that help or did it make it worse?
I was just like, why are you doing this? Like, what is happening here? He was bald and he kept making bald jokes about himself.
Okay.
He was like, they're going to do an old scalpectomy on the chrome domus and like shit like that where you're like, okay, listen. And I talked to him afterwards and he was like, hey, sorry about the jokes. And I was like, what? And he was like, that's how I know if the nitrous has kicked in.
No way.
It's like when people start laughing at the terrible jokes.
I love that as a test. He's basically doing like Ed McMahon shtick.
That dude owned. I loved that dentist.
The funniest shit that I've gotten in like my little period of going to like a million doctor's appointments is my PT guy, who is, again, a nice guy. I'm not trying to like cancel my PT guy. But like my first appointment, I went in, I was like explaining my shoulder thing, and he's like, you know, explaining like, okay, you need to strengthen these muscles and do these stretches. And I made some sort of offhand comment. I was like, it's really interesting that like something as kind of simple as like stretches and like, you know, some stuff with like a rubber band can actually have like such a profound effect on people. He's like, well, this is something that the Western medical system doesn't want to admit. And he went on this like kind of spiel about how like this is kind of like forbidden medicine. And I was like, we're in a hospital right now. You're wearing a lab coat. Like, this is as Western as medicine gets. Like, we're in the middle of a doctor-patient relationship right now.
If this were a political cartoon, you would be labeled Western medicine.
Yeah, exactly. But it's like, it's so fascinating to me. This is also when we were doing all of these episodes about like the French paradox and stuff. And it's like, this is outside, or like, this is forbidden knowledge that they don't want you to know. And it's like, this is not forbidden knowledge. This is like published in journals. This is completely like the benefits of physical therapy are like extremely well established. And there's like major journals about physical therapy. It's like a field of medicine.
Right. Like even pretty restrictive insurance plans still cover PT. Yeah. Like, great. Okay, sure.
I have one more stage of the doctoring process. And then I have some stuff about life expectancy that I couldn't help myself and did some reading. But this is, maybe this isn't going to be relevant for you because you said that you've never had a referral, but my scariest doctor experience, this was a couple of years ago, I had been having this thing where I would go biking and then after like 5-10 minutes I would get like a dry, like a feeling of like a piece of soil or something in my eye, like a weird, like, oh, this is just like a weird discomfort like thing in my eye. And I was at the doctor for something else, probably another fucking running injury, and at the end of the appointment, you know, he's like, is there anything else you want to talk to me about? And I was like, oh yeah, I have this like weird eye thing when I go biking. And then I described it to him. And then he started asking me about my sexual practices. Boop. He was like, how many partners have you had? Are you using protection? I was like, this is a weird like line of questioning, but like, okay. And I answered all the questions. And then he's like, so I'm pretty sure that you have ocular herpes.
What?
I was like, what is that? He's like, it's exactly what it sounds like. It's like herpes of the eye. And like, this is a thing that you can get from people, like crotch to eyeball contact, apparently. And I was like, is that serious? And he's like, well, in most cases, you don't go blind.
What's happening here?
I was like, in most cases, like blindness is on the table now. So he's like, okay, I'm going to refer you to like an eyeball specialist. He sends me home. And of course I lose my fucking mind because the next like 5 days, I'm like, oh my fucking God, I have like ocular herpes. I'm like Googling constantly. I'm like telling everyone, I'm like, it's terminal. I'm not going to be able to see again. I'm just like in a total anxiety spiral. I finally get my appointment with the eyeball specialist. I go in and he's very like sober and like staid. And he like, he does the poof in my eyeball with air.
Yeah.
And he like looks at, he like zooms in and does the like, he shines the light in it and everything. And he's like, okay, I have your diagnosis. I was like, oh, thank, fine, finally. And he goes, you have dry eyes. here's an eye drop. It is like one of those like single use eye drop things. He's like, go to Bartels, buy like over the counter fucking eye drops.
Get yourself some Visine.
Exactly.
Go watch the old like Ben Stein ads for Visine. <I know. laughs> Good Lord.
So that is my only experience going to a specialist. And it's the best experience of my life. I mean, I could have like danced home from that appointment. I was like,
that's amazing.
Yes. Dry eyes, dry eyes.
I will say I had a similar experience recently with, not with me, but with my dog. He had a big, wild looking growth like on his sort of snout, on his lip. And it was like red and it was inflamed. And I was I started looking into it. And of course, like, listen, Dr. Google, blah, blah, blah. But like, there are times when it's a bad idea. And when it's your dog and you're not totally rational, it's a bad idea.
Yeah.
So I brought him in and then they examined him and then they were like, okay, so it's canine papillomavirus. And I was like, he has dog warts?
Oh, that's what papillomavirus means?
He has dog warts. And they're like, yeah. It'll pretty much just like wither and fall off or like be subsumed back into his snout or whatever. But they couldn't get me in for like 2 weeks. So I spent a solid 2 weeks in an anxiety addled brain.
Yeah.
Being like, oh my God, my dog is definitely dying right now. It's parvo. It's cancer. Everything's fucked.
So in doing all this thinking about like various like tragic doctor experiences that I and you have had, I actually got very curious about like what we know about the relationship between the US healthcare system and mortality rates. America's rates of like heart disease, cancer, stroke are like roughly congruent with other countries.
Right.
It's actually interesting. I was expecting higher rates here, but it's like we're better than Germany and we're worse than France. It's like, yeah, okay.
We're like sandwiched in between Western European countries that love nothing more culturally than being like, check out these fucking Americans.
Yeah, it's really weird. And then the one that we can't really do comparisons on is apparently diabetes. It's like almost impossible to compare across countries because of this death certificate stuff that we talked about in the French Paradox episode, that like it's listed as a contributing cause, but it's not clear if that like actually reflects reality or if it's something that doctors just kind of write. So apparently there's been papers written on this, and then there's like response papers that are like, dude, you just can't compare diabetes across countries because like the data is such garbage. So like we don't actually know how our outcomes compare to the rest of the world.
Totally. And also, you know, folks, blood sugar exists on a spectrum, and we have socially and medically decided that there is a cutoff point when that spectrum is too high, and that's what we call diabetes. And there is a, you know, sort of point in that spectrum slightly below that that we call pre-diabetes, right? Those thresholds actually are different in different places, right?
Right.
The threshold to be considered pre-diabetic in the US is having fasting blood sugar of over 100. Elsewhere in the world, it's 110. So we're also not playing out of the same playbook, right? So we're not actually able to compare apples to apples quite on a bunch of different fronts.
Which is such bullshit to me because the whole panic around obesity is like, oh, it's about their health, right?
Yeah.
But then we have these basic fucking gaps of things like we don't even know the severity of diabetes here because it's like the data is such fucking garbage. It's like, well, if we cared about this stuff, we would be trying to unravel this and understand non-communicable diseases.
If we want to actually understand diabetes and how to treat it and how to improve folks' health regardless of their size, that would require us to cap insulin prices, right?
Yeah. Oh,
that would require us to, many, many insurance companies don't cover continuous glucose monitors for people who are diabetic. So those people have to pay out of pocket, you know, $100 or more every 2 weeks for a glucose monitor, right? Like we are doing things to make management of diabetes much harder.
Yeah.
And like, if we really cared about this shit, we would also be working to make that stuff more available, right? Like you have said, like fire hydrants full of insulin.
Hose down the children, just like spray bottles. Like when a dog misbehaves, you just have like a little spray bottle of insulin. That's how diabetes works.
Just have those like front lawn sprinklers.
Yeah, exactly. Just like kids insulin. Running through. Uh-huh. Oh, it's insulin.
Whee!
I find this really interesting because this drop in American life expectancy seems to be like an actual mystery. The way that it intersects with the healthcare system, because like we have socialized medicine for people over 65, right? We have Medicare, which means that like access to healthcare is like, you can't say it's not a problem, but it's like for the ages where people do most of the dying, right? The vast majority of deaths are people over 65. We actually have basically universal healthcare, and our outcomes for older people are for some conditions better than they are in Western Europe. For some things, they're worse. But they sort of average out. And like America has better 1 year after heart attack mortality rates than Western Europe. Like we do really good on preventing second heart attacks for people. We have better breast cancer survival rates than Western Europe. I think because we're much more aggressive with screening. Mm. The evidence seems to indicate that like the main reason things are so bad in America is inequality, that like our outcomes for poor people are just like so much worse. Like a poor American versus a poor Danish person, it's like so much worse here. But then even rich Americans do worse than like rich Danes.
Yeah.
Like it's still really bad. And in ways that like I don't get. Like there's no, because if you're rich, like the American healthcare system is like actually pretty good. You know, if you can afford to go to the doctor when you want to, over treatment is like a really big problem in the American healthcare system. So like you're getting the screenings, you're getting attention from doctors, you're getting all that stuff if you can fucking afford it, which is like the central problem with the American healthcare system, is that like only the people who can afford it are getting high quality care, but they are getting high quality care and their health outcomes are fucking worse. So I still like, I don't get it. Like it doesn't make any fucking sense to me.
It's really wild to me.
I mean, I do remember something I was reading, I forget for which episode, but I was reading a bunch of heart attack stuff. Mm. And there was a really interesting section in one of the studies that I was reading that it's like, we know that poor people have much higher rates of heart attacks, but like we don't actually know why.
Yeah.
Right? We don't know what it is about the poverty that's making them at so much higher risk for cardiovascular disease. And it's like, clearly there's some health access component. There's probably a stress component that like they tend to like work longer hours.
Yeah.
All it does is it takes the mystery like one level deeper. It's like, we know that it's related to race. We know that it's related to poverty. We know that it's related to all kinds of social marginalizations, but we don't actually know like the mechanism by which those things are being carried out, right? Because I do think like obviously health access has something to do with it, but I don't think health access is everything.
It's just wild to me that we continually bypass the most obvious explanations, which is like reduce the inequality gaps that we're facing here. Like usually like give people money or give people health care, right? Mm-hmm. And we just don't ever do anything about those things, right? Like we're like, well, there's kind of this low-hanging fruit and that might have an impact, but we still don't know all this other stuff. And it's like, well, you fucking start somewhere, right?
Yeah, I mean, it feels like there's a huge effort to sort of to identify something specific so that we can like pull apart the problem and deal with like the bad part. Mm-hmm. But then another way to approach this would just be like, well, then we should just have less inequality.
Yeah.
Right? Like if inequality is driving it, we don't necessarily need to know what it is about the inequality. We could just like have way less poverty in this country. And especially like child poverty, which is like the most fucking solvable, just like give parents of children money. Like we could just do that stuff.
The pandemic is like a great example of that, right? We just fucking paid people for a little bit.
And like savings rates went up.
Child poverty rates like changed dramatically. And then we were like, whoops, sorry about that. Yeah, Big mistake.
It's like, I think people were scared that the pandemic showed like too obviously how much like the solution is just like giving poor people money.
And giving like, everyone healthcare. Yeah. Done.
Yeah. It's like so clear and clean. And it's like, no, it has to be more complicated than that. It's like, maybe it's not more complicated.
Well, and our brains are all pickled from like 40 years of Reagan style, like rhetoric about like, they can't be trusted.
Right.
Right. Which again, it's been said before, it will be said again. Every poor person I have known has been significantly better with money than every middle class or wealthy person I have known.
Yeah. So I don't know. To me, it's like, we'll obviously do more research and we'll end up looking into this for an entire episode, but it's like, it's just really complicated. And it's remarkable to me how long we've had this issue of like non-communicable diseases being like the, you know, 1 through 5 killers of Americans. And like, we still, in a lot of ways, don't actually know that much about them.
Right. You and I talked about this during the sort of sugar episode, was that like, listen, again, back to our diabetes example. If we care about diabetes, we would not be basing most of our blood sugar research on people who are not diabetic.
Mm.
Like, what? We would be focusing way more on trying to get a better handle on how different people's blood sugar looks different and like what are the sort of source codes for that difference, right? Mm-hmm. We would be focused more on getting treatments out there, all this kind of stuff. But like, we're not doing that. right? Like, those are all decisions we are happily bypassing, it seems.
That's because Western medicine doesn't want you to know it.